Hello and welcome to the Rubber Dinosaur Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Staggs. Rubber Dinosaur is a product of Deep 8 LLC. Visit us online at www.entertheoctopus.wordpress.com. Hello and welcome to the Rubber Dinosaur Podcast. I've got as my guest today Charles Tan. Charles is well known to anybody that frequents any of the speculative literature blogs as the bibliophile stalker. He does some of the best interviews that you can possibly find online with some of fantasy and science fiction's best authors. He's also involved in his home country and their literature as well. He is based in the Philippines, is this right?
Yep.
Well, welcome, by the way.
Yeah. Hello, everybody. So, what's the name of the podcast again? Dinosaur?
Rubber Dinosaur.
Rubber Dinosaur.
Yeah, I know. Okay, it's
kind of, name.
Yeah, it's kind of a strange name. I like rubber dinosaurs, and well, that's pretty much the most long and short of it there. So,
yeah, I was expecting something related to octopi or something.
I know. I thought I'd throw people a curveball here. So tell me, what's going on right now? It's about a little bit after 11 in the Philippines, and where are you, and what are you doing?
Yeah, I'm at home right now, actually playing game Azuma. Earlier today, I just came from my literary discussion group. It's some of us writers, and then we usually critique stories, not ours. We usually tackle stories that are available online, then how we can improve our craft based on those stories. Sometimes usually it's Dean Alfar who picks a story. Sometimes they're good stories. Sometimes they're not. But usually it's not that polarized. Sometimes like some people like the story, some people don't like that. But what's important there is the discourse. We are identifying what you like about this story and how it works.
Now, you guys, I know you have a pretty international range of literature there. You are not limited to what you have around you locally. I know we've talked about this before, but how big of there is a fan base for speculative literature, science fiction, fantasy, and that sort of thing in the Philippines?
Well, it depends on what context, like. When Neil Gaiman came here, there were like thousands of people lining up, and as far as he was concerned, it's like the biggest gathering, at least in Asia. I mean, it was more than the people in Singapore. And I think, you know, when it comes to like international lit, especially the ones with movies like Harry Potter or Twilight, you know, they have a big following. But when it comes to local speculative fiction, the print run of most books here are around 500 to 1,000, at least fiction. So, you know, that's really not a big market.
Not at all. I mean, how big of a population is in the Philippines anyway? I don't have it right off. It's got to be a pretty large nation. And to have only 500 to 1,000 prints of a book.
Yeah, actually, I'm searching Google and I don't memorize it. But, you know, we're should be millions. Actually, we're overpopulated, and actually right now I'm living in what you call Metro Manila. It's where most of the people are. It's like the equivalent of New York, and the rest of the country, it's not so populated. So there's really this disparity in population where we are. I'm looking out, there should be like 76 million people.
So that's a very small percentage for a print run of a book, then. So, why is it that there's as not much support for local science fiction and fantasy?
Well, actually, it's not just science fiction and fantasy, but Philippine literature in general. But apparently, you know, what people are claiming that it's that not enough people here are reading, but that's not really the case, because one of our bestsellers actually is the romance genre. It's around, typical print run will have 50 to 60,000 people, and that's what usually the masses purchase. But when it comes to normal fiction, a lot of people really prefer the international books, or at least American books. Like Harry Potter and Twilight is just as popular here as it is elsewhere. And now, then...
Go ahead.
Yeah, go on.
Well, I was going to ask, you know, I know the Philippines kind of have a difficult history or sad history with Western powers having been, colonized or strongly influenced to one degree or another by, you know, different Western powers. How much do you think that legacy has affected the nation's own appreciation for its arts? For its own arts?
Yeah. I think, the biggest... for brief history, we've been colonized by three nations. One is Spain, second one is America, and then third during World War II was Japan. I think the biggest impact there was, at least when it comes to literature, is America, because for a good chunk of our history, or at least during that pivotal years between the 1900s to around 1950s, Filipinos were speaking in English, and a lot of our literature were written in English. Actually, our first novel was written by our national hero, Jose Rizal, that was in Spanish. Mm-hmm. And then, probably in between that time, a lot of the literature was in English. So, yeah, I mean, in that sense, America has a big impact here, both positive and negative. Japanese residents here, but the one in the Philippines really speaks Japanese, for example. And then Spanish, there are some terms that have been melded into our language, which is Filipino. Mm-hmm. And then some of our states, Cebu, they're still English mm-hmm. speakers. They actually refuse to speak Filipino, or they weren't taught Filipino, so they're basic language is English. So, yeah, that's how the impact here.
Now, your family is from China, isn't that right?
Not really. Actually, there are a lot of Chinese immigrants here in the Philippines. Okay. My mom was raised here in the Philippines. I think my dad came from China. He has a Chinese passport. But it probably extends more to my grandparents' side. Like me, I've never been to China. I don't think my mom really been to China except on tourist trips. And then, yeah, probably my dad's the one who often goes to China for business, and he has a Chinese passport, and that's probably it. But more or less, I associate myself more with the Philippines.
I see. Now, I wanted to ask you a little bit about where your appreciation for speculative literature comes from. And I know that you have a real dedication to it, because not only do you have this day job that involves a lot of your time, you spend what little time you do have interviewing and promoting authors you like at your website, which, let me give that URL, is http://charles-tan.blogspot.com.
Actually, that's an improvement, because the old URL was Charles Satan. because my middle initial was the letter A.
Right. That's I got to tell you, I've known some people that saw you on Twitter as CHARLESATAN, and they thought you were Charles Satan. So.
Yeah. but at least it's a catchy name, PRY.
That's true. You know, I've got to tell you, I had a hard time growing up with my last name, STAGGS, which not only does it rhyme with a very unkind word for homosexuals, it's also just an unusual name in itself. People don't hear my name a lot, and so I got picked on quite a bit growing up. But now that I'm involved in doing PR and trying to get out there and associate with people in the speculative fiction world, it's a lot better for me. It's good to have an unusual name. It's catchy. So, well, anyway, tell me, how did you start Bibliophile Stalker, and what got you into doing the things that you do?
Yeah, actually, I've been blogging since college. It was in 2001. But, of course, it was hosted in another site, and... Like all blogs, I think I was finding my voice, in the, first 3 years or first 4 years. It was, the emotional stuff. It was more of a personal blog rather than focused on literature. Eventually, though, I was reading like the professional blogger sites like Seth Godin or Pro mm-hmm. Blogger, and then they said na, like if you really want to have a blog with a dedicated audience, you need to blog regularly and have a niche. And then eventually, you know, I was taking up creative writing, so that was also my outlet. Like I said, okay, I'm a writer, I need to be writing regularly, and I thought the blog would be a good focus. Actually, it's had a lot of transition because there was a time when I was actually blogging about technology gadgets, but eventually I settled on literary topics. Like I said, okay, on Monday I'll do book reviews. Tuesday we'll probably have an essay. Wednesday we'll have a feature article of some sort, and then I think it started out really with the book reviews. Eventually, after doing a couple of reviews, people started sending me books. So that was like became a regular staple. And then I just told myself that, you know, unlike a lot of the book review blogs out there, they do come out with book reviews regularly, but you don't know when they're coming out. So to set myself apart, I said, okay, I'll dedicate Monday to book reviews. And then, the interviews actually was an accident, really. When I was promoting the Wizards of the Discoveries line, one of the authors, J.M. McDermott, mm-hmm. Contacted me, and he said, you know, wow, this is somebody who I don't know from the Philippines, and he's interested in promoting my book for just the sake of doing so. Then that was in like September, October of 2007, I think. Then towards the end of the year, he said, hey, Jeff Vandermeer's interviewing me for the Omnivoracious blog at Amazon. Why don't you interview me for your blog? So that's basically how I started doing interviews. And then when I was conducting interviews with him, I thought, it's already started it with him. Well, might as well try to interview other authors. Then one of my first set of interviews was with the Wizards of the Discovery. Mm-hmm. Was with the authors at the Wizards of the Discovery's line, which was Richard Dansky, Stephen, Melanie Tem, then Rob Rogers. With the exception of Stephen, Melanie Tem, the other two really were relatively new, at least when it comes to fiction. Actually, Richard Dansky's a veteran when it came to game writing. Like, he worked with White Wolf before, and then he wrote some of the White Wolf novels. But Firefly Rain, which was his Discovery, Wizards of Discovery's book, it's a relatively new entry into the fiction. Then, yeah, Rob Rogers is also new. It's his book, Devilscape, is a superhero crime novel mashup. Then slowly from there, I approached people via email na, hey, maybe I could do interviews with you. And then through sheer luck, I think like in 2008, I did around 49 interviews in like a year. So that was like almost a weekly.
That's where the stalker name came in.
Yeah, actually, before that, I was calling myself Stalker because I like to pop out of nowhere and then spook people, and then boo. And then, you know, I love scaring you. So, like, even in, like, 2002, 2003, you know, my blog had the word stalker in it. And then, yeah, eventually when Blogger had their new beta, I transferred the blog. Before, as I said before, my old blog was like at charlesatan.blogspot.com. Then, since I had to transfer, I renamed it to charles-tan. Anyway, the interviews also led me to other non-paying gigs, like the admin for the Nebula Awards got me because they needed interviewers for the new back then, the Nebula Awards blog. And eventually, because he quit, eventually got passed on to me. So I'm in charge of the content for the Nebula Awards blog. And then, since I also know Paul Tremblay, and then they also launched the Shirley Jackson Awards last year, they also wanted to help promote the authors who were nominated, so he asked me also to contribute to the Shirley Jackson Awards blog, so I also do interviews there.
Now, I know you've interviewed a lot of people, obviously. Can you tell me a couple of your favorite people that you've interviewed, or the ones you've been most excited about personally?
Well, actually, it depends. Like, a lot of authors, I'm excited to interview them, especially like people like Jeff Vandermeer or Jeffrey Ford. But on the opposite end of the spectrum, some of the best interviews, which, you know, isn't necessarily due to me sometimes, because I just email them the questions and then they answer it, like, would be John Grant or Lucy Shepard, mainly because, you know, their answers are well formulated and they're relatively lengthy and substantial. I'm sure I have several more interviews that I really love, but I can't seem to remember right now. I mean, by now I've probably done 100 interviews in my blog and then 50 more in the other websites.
Now, I know that Americans here, we're very influenced by Asian culture, but it's usually Japanese culture that mostly influences us as far as popular culture goes and our arts and things like that. Why is it, do you think, that we're not as influenced by Philippine culture? What can we draw from Filipino culture that would be good for us? What should we find interesting? What should we investigate in your culture?
I don't think like people pay attention to the Philippines because it's only honestly a small country, and you know like Japan is a first world country, so people pay attention to it. And Philippines is usually, you know, it's not exactly the most positive country that you think about, but on what Westerners can draw from Philippines, actually our politics is very interesting. Like what's happening to Iran right now is actually what happened to us towards the end of martial law, because our then president Ferdinand Marcos, who was our president for the past 20 years, because of pressure from the actually, you know, when he declared martial law, he had the full support of the U.S.
Right,
but
I know.
But towards the end of term, he was forced to hold a snap election. And then, basically, he was running against Cory Aquino. What's interesting there is she didn't really want to run for president. Her name entered the ballots because her husband, Ninoy Aquino, was a senator, was assassinated. And then people were rallying under the Aquino name. And then people ran a petition that we want you to run for president. And they got something like 100,000 signatures. And that was how she eventually ran for president. Anyway, they held the snap elections, and then Marcos declared himself the president, even though the vote counters were saying that, you know, that wasn't the case, that people were getting the votes and then putting their own results. So and then that's eventually what happened. What became People Power or the EDSA Revolution, where people rallied in the streets, then in the thousands, and said, you know, we don't want Marcos to be our president. We want Cory Aquino, who's rightfully won the elections. And then, of course, the Ferdinand Marcos sent in tanks to stop the rallies. But what interesting there, thankfully, was you know the soldiers didn't fire. Actually, we were throwing like flowers and rosaries at them as a sign of peace. Yeah, but you know, they didn't shoot Filipinos. And you know, this also happened in China, but tanks ran over.
Right.
Or you know, what's happening now in Iran, where you know people are dying. So hopefully, you know, for us, it's like it's something that we are familiar with. Another thing that's also popular here actually is the cell phone industry. Like you'd have people who like can't afford a computer or even a landline, but they'll own a cell phone because it's become so ubiquitous. And in line with that, actually, we are a company that lives on micropayments. Like, if you cross the street, there'll be merchants selling you cigarettes by the stick instead of by the pack. No, and actually, cigarettes here are cheap.
Yeah.
Like, it'll cost you around 60 cents to buy a pack. It's not really taxed, and it's the vice of most people. And going back to micropayments, you know, here you can easily buy a SIM card for your cell phone. Then there's prepaid cards you can buy to purchase credits. So, you know, that's another sci-fi thing that's happening in a third world country.
You know, go ahead.
Yeah, go on.
Well, I was going to say that I've heard a lot of people say that, you know, recently Jeff Vandermeer and the folks at Wofford College did a thing where they asked authors about some of the places that they think are the most fantastical cities. And several of them, actually said that smaller countries, you know, some of the third world countries that they had visited were the most sci-fi, you know, the most fantastical because of these same sorts of things that you mentioned, that you have a mix of, you know, kind of old, you know, culture, traditional culture with a quickly growing science and technology that's being quickly implemented into the native way of life.
Yeah, for me, it's not so much that we're growing technology, but, you know, it's just one focused element because we're still a third world country. So devices like iPods are still luxuries for us. But, you know, you'd think something like cell phones would be a luxury item, but somehow even the poorest of the poor managed to own one. And well, actually, to the point that, you know, when thieves accost you in the street, they don't ask for your wallet; they're asking for "give me your cell phone." then you know, it's that kind of surreal thing. And in line with Jeff Vandermeer's you know, that question, I think in many ways we're also like South America, where magic realism developed. Like, a lot of our folks are still superstitious. Like, one common thing here are faith healers. You know, there'd be stories about this priest, or whether it's Catholic or not, you know, they'd be healing you by giving you strange medicine or... For example, if you have cancer, they'll thrust their hand inside your ribs and they'll pass through the skin. Then they'll pull out a stone and then you'd be cured from then on. And, you know, these be common stories, and it sounds magical, but a lot of people really believe in this kind of stuff.
Now, this is something I wanted to ask you about. With all these sorts of elements still in your culture... and don't get me wrong, we Americans have our own sorts of, you know, magical beliefs. I wonder why science fiction and fantasy hasn't seized a hold with the Filipino writers as much. Why aren't there more local Filipino writers churning out these sorts of things?
Actually, if you look at our literary history, those fantastical elements do find their way into our what we call our literary fiction. It's just the branding. We don't really call it fantasy or even speculative fiction. And in fact, that's one of the arguments against the local speculative fiction movement, that it's real to us, so we don't call it fantasy. It's just, it could be realist or just fiction.
Well, that's a very good point, and I think it points to certain cultural assumptions that someone like myself from a Western country would make and would impose on another culture that, you know, to me, you know, including such elements would clearly point to something being, you know, magic, realist, or fantasy. But in a culture where these things are acceptable and a part of everyday life, that doesn't necessarily make it so. So do you have a lot of writers like that that include these elements in their fiction?
Well, we have obviously genre writers, so they do include those elements. But when it comes to our literary writers, we have a number who does include them in their works.
Please, go ahead, Charles. I'm sorry. I've had too much coffee this morning.
That's not a problem. Yeah, I'm just going to say that. But of course, they don't, these literary writers, they don't identify themselves with, you know, genre.
Can you recommend to me, are there any that would be available in an English translation that I should search for?
No, actually, a lot of our fiction are in English. Ah. But the problem isn't so much that not that they're not written in English, but distribution, because when your typical print run is 500, mm-hmm. and you know, it's really just marketed here in the Philippines rather than abroad.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, now, what are you going to be doing with your blog in the future? Is there something that we can look toward, or are there certain projects you're going to be involved in? Do you have any plans?
Right now, it's mostly maintaining the content that's already there. It's basically links, which I was actually inspired by your own blog. Actually, the time I started compiling the weekly links was when you said... it takes too much time, so I'll stop compiling links. Yeah, that's actually my inspiration. Okay, since Matt's not doing it anymore, I might as well start doing so.
Good.
So there's that on Mondays to Fridays. Then Mondays are the book reviews. Tuesdays are the interviews. Then Wednesdays are just me ranting or doing some feature article of some sort.
While I got you on the phone here, or on Skype, yeah. I should say, yeah. I wanted to ask you, when I said that Americans are influenced very much by Asian cultures, we here love, a lot of us love anime and manga there's just a lot of influence that I could talk about. What do we, when our own writers try to write about Asian cultures, what do we get wrong? What would we need to know when we're writing about an Asian culture? If we're Western writers.
But I don't think I can answer that question, mainly because I haven't really read a lot of Western literature that tries to tackle Asian cultures. And Asia actually is a big country. Like, when you talk about American writing about China or writing about Japan, that's different from them writing about the Philippines or Singapore or Malaysia.
Well, that's very true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's one of the last things I wanted to talk about with you. Is there anything else you wanted to maybe add to our discussion here? Anything I forgot to bring up, or you wanted to ask about or say?
Might need to say the evening right now, but nothing comes to mind immediately.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us again. Your URL that people can find online is http.
Yeah.
:// obviously. www.charles-tan.blogspot.com. And I encourage people to check